Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello. You're listening to BFN. This is the podcast about infertility, IVF, and the trials of trying for a baby. I'm Gabby.
And I'm Emma, and we're both card-carrying members of the Infertility Club.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am good, how are you?
Well, I'm very sorry about last week. That's all I wanted to say.
And so you should be.
Yeah, I've been a bit under the weather and it all just got too much. And I just went, I can't do it. And you were like, okay, breathe. Yeah. We'll just skip a week. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. No one wants to have a mental breakdown.
No one, and
there's no need to. So it was all okay. It's all okay.
But apologies to anyone who was expecting an episode and didn't get one.
Sorry, guys.
I was having a moment.
But we're back now, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, we're back. And you all right, mate? You okay?
Yeah, I'm okay. Got a little bit of cold.
Small
tinge of cold, yeah.
We had a nice time in the last vestiges of sunshine today, didn't we?
We did, yes.
At pub.
Roasty toasty. Except, actually, none of us had a roast apart from Mr. Cappies. No. We can't really call that a roast. We went to the pub for lunch.
Yeah, we did.
As nice to see your face.
Yes, and we also, you know, took a moment for Her Majesty.
We did take a moment for Her Majesty.
Yeah.
Did we?
We didn't take a moment for Her Majesty, but we did discuss it. We did a bit of discussion. Yeah, we discussed how much we like the spectacle of it.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? Because obviously it's very sad that Our Majesty passed away last week. And I'm sure there are lots of people, Our Majesty. I'm sure there are lots of people listening who
the People's Majesty,
who have been, you know, it's been a sad time, and lots of people are mourning her loss, which we get.
Yeah,
lots of people aren't, and that's also worthy of remark. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, my Instagram feed is 50% people being like, "Oh, I'm so sad," and 50% people being like, "I'm not sad."
Yeah,
and both have very valid points.
Absolutely. And having grown up in Ireland, I, you know, I see all of those points, and I know that lots of people in Ireland probably aren't grieving like we are over here. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. You know, there's lots of people around the world that possibly aren't grieving. And that's okay. I think that's all you can say about it, really, because there's so many people on the Queenie monarchy side that are like, how dare you? And it's like, well, it's okay to just remind people that perhaps not everyone is feeling so sad.
My favourite account, social media account during this period has been someone called Vulgar Drawings, who has been accumulating all the random companies that have posted their sadness about the passing of Queen Elizabeth II, including Anne Summers.
And
various fast food outlets.
Yes, Domino's.
Domino's. Yeah, Domino's has gone big. And it's her commentary is very funny because it is just like, why are all these random brands posting about it?
I guess, it's funny as they feel like they have to, but would anyone notice if they didn't? I don't think they would. You know, everyone's just kind of getting on with however they want to deal with it themselves. No one's like, why are my favourite brands? Why have they not said anything?
Why hasn't Anne Summers said anything about the Queen?
She famously modelled all of her lingerie on the Queen's negligee. Why? No, it's bizarre.
Did you see the video of Gary Lineker's brother's club in Ibiza?
Oh my God, you're kidding me. No.
It's hilarious. All these like scantily clad, he describes them as beef eaters, like sexy beef eaters, but they're not sexy beef eaters because beef eaters are the people who guard the Tower of London. And these were wearing the big like furry hats. Mm-hmm. So they were
what do we call those
soldiers?
People?
We call them soldiers.
Queen's Guards?
Yeah, I think they were the Queen's Guards and now they're the King's Guards. But anyway, it's like if you haven't seen that video, look it up. It is hysterical.
Okay, oh well.
It's just shits
and giggles.
Yeah.
It's a strange old time. It's like, you know, it's weirdly kind of a big moment for people in this country. Bit sad, but also just quite interesting. You know, all the history.
Yeah. Yeah, I love all the like people in grey outfits, like super camp outfits, like playing trumpets. Love that.
This hasn't all happened
for them
before in our lifetime. We've never seen this before, what happens when a monarch dies. So
Some great outfits, some great like Penny Mordaunt's massive velvet hairband, Alice band. Very
Penny,
impressed by that.
Oh, Penny. Anyway, I think we should end the Queen segment by saying we are with everyone who's saddened by the loss of old Queenie, and also equally we see you if you don't mourn the loss as well.
Yeah. Brilliantly. If you thought about going into politics, mate.
I considered it once or twice, yeah. Do a good pussy bow shirt and a strong suit. Yeah.
A blouse. Right. Who are we talking to? Can you remember who we're talking to?
Oh my God, I can't even remember. It's been so long. It is Natalie Sutherland and Soumaya Wazani.
Yeah, and they are two people who work in law. So actually, Soumaya used to be a lawyer and now works in kind of on the recruitment side. Natalie is a partner at a firm called Burgess Mee. And they've both got their own journeys that you will hear about. And they decided to start an event called Infertility in the City, where people can kind of get together and talk about what they've been through, because I think, you know, I've worked in the city and it ain't easy.
No, it ain't easy. It's a very masculine environment that you don't really want to reveal your feminine kind of vulnerabilities, do you?
Yeah. And the other thing about Natalie is that she is the world's first fertility officer.
Yes.
At her law firm.
Yes, which is she's got a lot of press for that, didn't she?
She did, yeah. And, you know, I actually interviewed her for my day job and found her really interesting. And also we cried a bit together during that interview.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. Mm-hmm. I also find it interesting, Soumaya, obviously working in recruitment and trying to raise the bar in recruitment to make it less of a taboo to talk about this, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. So really interesting chat to listen to, especially if you work in kind of law or any kind of high-powered job, because... I mean, when I was going through it at first, I was in the city and it was quite challenging. And then we're talking to Professor Tim.
Of course, as always.
Yeah, as always.
And we were asking him whether having had COVID would reduce your embryo quality, which is something that surely, be to God, all of us have had it now, right?
Yeah, I mean... God, my sister hasn't, I don't think.
Hasn't she?
No.
Wow.
She's been very careful.
Oh, has she? But even if you're careful, like, even people I know that have been very careful still get it, you know?
Yeah, my brother, who should have been shielding, has had it twice. So there's that. I've had it twice.
Maybe three times, judging on that cough, Emma.
Yeah, mate. Took a test for this one. And that's all coming up. And obviously we'll have our chat, which we will put towards the end of the podcast.
Time,
so you can just turn off
the notes.
Yeah. So after Professor Tim, switch off.
Mm-hmm. Unless you want to hear from us.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you can reach us on Instagram.
At Big Fat Negative.
You can call us on Twitter.
Call us on Twitter. Give us a quick ring.
Yeah.
Ring our bell at Big Fat Negative.
And you can, I don't know, video us on email.
bigfatnegativepodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah. And also you can buy our book.
Oh my God. It's called Big Fat Negative. It's available at all good bookshops, including my local bookshop in Ramsgate, which I'm very excited about. Aww. Shout out to Book Bodega. I was delighted to see it there on the shelf.
Yeah. And also, massive amount of love to all the people who've left reviews recently. Like, yes. It's really, really helpful. And if you could continue to leave a nice review for us.
If you've got some things to say, please do say them.
Yeah, we would love that. So please do leave a review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts, because it kind of helps other people to find it. Mm-hmm. And if you've read the book, also please review it on Amazon if you liked it. If you didn't like it, just leave it.
It's fine. Just don't say anything. It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
All right, guys. Well, enjoy the episode.
Mm-hmm. Natalie and Sumeya, guys, welcome to the podcast. It's really nice to have you on.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So obviously, the way that we always start this is tell us about your journeys. And Sumeya, should we start with you?
Yes, sure. So where shall I start? So 2015 is probably when I had my first encounter with sort of infertility challenges. So I had I suffered a ruptured ectopic pregnancy at work. I was 10 weeks or 9 weeks pregnant. It initially had been identified as a missed miscarriage. And then I remember sort of vividly telling my boss, I was a practicing lawyer at the time in the city. And I remember telling my boss, you know, I just don't feel quite right. We weren't trying for a baby. I had no idea I was pregnant. Anyway, I then did a pregnancy test, discovered I was pregnant, didn't mention anything about it, but started to feel quite ropey. Had a bleed, went to the nearest hospital to my workplace, and someone fairly junior scanned me. And she was like, yeah, I'm really sorry, there's nothing there. You've obviously just had a miscarriage. Go home, bleed for a few weeks, and you'll be fine, hopefully. And things didn't really improve. And then I think about 10 days after that, it was a Saturday, and I remember feeling really unwell at work that entire week. But we had trials on, and it was crazy busy. And I remember saying to my husband Saturday morning, it was about 10 o'clock, and I was like, I just can't get out of bed. I feel so rough. And he was like, you've been sleeping too long. Get out of bed, move around, go and do a workout, do something. So I went and did an insanity workout. Do you remember those insanity workouts?
Oh my God.
And I did this insanity workout, and it was just, I remember just thinking, yeah, this is really taking it out of me today. And then anyway, lo and behold, on Monday, I went into the office. I was in the office at about 7:45. I was the first one there. And then we had a trial that week. And there was one of the junior lawyer that came in a couple, maybe 10, 15 minutes after me. And I'll never forget, I leant down to like pick up this really heavy lever arch file. And at the same time, I sneezed and I just felt this like almighty tear.
Oh my God.
I was like, oh no, that's not good. What on earth is that? I thought it was my appendix or something. Yeah. Anyway, I went to the loo and realised things weren't as they should be. And so I went to a private hospital very close by because I called my GP and she was like, look, you need to be seen ASAP. I think you might have an ectopic pregnancy from what you're saying. And I had surgery that day, a couple of hours after, and the consultant that saw me said, you know, you're in a life-threatening condition. You've got 600 mils of dark black blood from what we can see on the scan in your pelvis. That's a sign of potential infection, etc. Anyway, it was all a bit of drama and all very, you know, stressful. And I then decided, probably, I don't know, 5-6 weeks after that, that I just wanted to leave practice. I found law as an industry just not very supportive of situations of that nature. Back then, there wasn't really much talk about well-being. I think, you know, COVID kind of put that all in the spotlight. And yeah, I just, you know, I thought actually my days here are probably done. Anyway, since then, I then had I had three ectopic pregnancies after that. Two more before my son, who's five, one after my son. And then I had a couple of miscarriages as well. So it's been fairly tumultuous. Yeah, it's been a bumpy ride, but yeah, it is what it is. I think now one of the projects that I'm really passionate about, and so is Natalie's, I'm sure she'll tell you, is bringing sort of the issue of infertility in the workplace to the forefront. Mm-hmm. Having left practice, I run an executive search firm, so I move sort of very senior people around the city in law firms, and there's just such little talk of infertility, family planning, what it all means. And so we've just been on this crusade to make everybody realise that it's not just them and these kind of clandestine appointments and journeys, and you know, it all needs to end and we need to talk about it.
Amazing.
Just really quickly, for ectopic pregnancies, I'm pretty sure that most listeners will be like, oh, you can have a maximum of two because one in each tube. How do you have four?
Because they don't always have to be in the fallopian tube. Mine were in the fallopian tube, but they can resolve themselves. So just because I had an ectopic pregnancy, one that ruptured in my right tube and two that were in my left tube. But if you're lucky enough, they will just resolve themselves under conservative management and you can be fine. But really interestingly, and I'm obviously not giving medical advice, but my fertility doctor, no one's ever told me this before, but my fertility doctor told me that women that have a really high NK cell count are more prone to ectopic pregnancies, because the only place in the female body where there's no NK cells is the fallopian tubes.
Oh, that is really interesting, isn't it?
Interesting.
That's fascinating. Sumaya, thank you. Natalie, I've heard yours before and I cried last time, so excited for this time.
Oh, God. So I had a wonderful pregnancy with my first daughter, Delilah. And I was 36, so I was probably already sort of towards the end of your fertility. I was very lucky at that point. But then we got pregnant again naturally in 2018. But I had a miscarriage. So I went for my 12-week scan and the baby was basically, no baby, it was 6 weeks. The baby would have died. I'd been bleeding that 6 week. Mm-hmm. I went to the EPU and they basically said, there's nothing we can do. We just have to wait and hope for the best and keep an eye on it. And I stopped bleeding, but I still felt pregnant. So, you know, when you kind of cling on to those feelings. Yeah. So this time I really felt sick and I hadn't had any of those feelings with Delilah. I had this weird craving for red meat and jelly sweets. So weird. So I was still feeling sick. I was still feeling tired and really clinging on to this, but there was something nagging me that felt that it wasn't quite right. And I don't know at the time what that was. And I'd never really heard of miscarriage. So when I went to the scan and they said, are you sure you're 12 weeks? Which automatically makes me think, well, yeah, can't you see? Mm-hmm. So that's when the poor sonographer has to go and get the doctor and you get told there's no heartbeat and the feral noise comes out of you and then you're ushered into this room and they leave you alone for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. And your world has crashed and all that timeline that you've been thinking about. So, you know, what we're going to have when we have two babies and all that kind of stuff, it just ends. And it was very, very upsetting. But for me, what the sort of subsequently what happened is all of the complications that carried on from that.
Yeah, so I don't think we've really talked about this kind of thing on this podcast before. Like, well, what happens next?
So they give you various options. So expectant management is literally where you just go off and they wait for the body to do what it needs to do. Mm-hmm. And I was having to go back home. My nana died. So I was like, right, well, let's just do nothing right now. I'm not going back to hospital now. So we did nothing. So this was April, but by May, I was still testing positive. So nothing had happened. And then it's medical management. So the pessaries and you go into hospital, they give you the tablets, then you go away and then you come back the next day and stay overnight. That's so painful and really quite disgusting. So they're just basically watching and waiting for you to pass the product. And that was awful. And again, I was scanned and they could still see that there was this retained product. And I mean, there's the DNC, that's an option, but I've got fibroids as well. So I think they were like, no, we're not going to do that for fibroids. So then I had the surgical management, so the ERPC. So that was my first general anaesthetic. And I went on to have like three other operations, so four in total in 8 months. I've never had generals before, but I'd had all these various surgeries subsequently. So this is now July. I have the I have the surgery, and then I'm still testing positive for pregnancy. But that now they're like, well, we've got everything, so you'll just wait and you'll get your period. And so in the August, I thought what I was getting was my period, but this was so heavy, and it was really quite shocking. So 20 minutes where it's just, this is gonna sound really disgusting, but you know, just gushing out of you. And it was really
a bit of description here.
But I was so shocked. I was like, what is this? This is not a period. So in my naivety, I just thought, well, maybe this is the end. This is now the end of my miscarriage, and I'll go back to normal. But then September, it was happening again. And this was, you know, constant now. And I was basically waking up in piles of blood. And I had to, when I'd go to the toilet, then I think one time I passed out from the blood loss. And it was my daughter who was shouting, mummy, 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 from her bed that sort of brought me round. And she's two, and she came in and she was like, mummy, there's blood everywhere again, because she'd seen it before. But she went to go and get my phone so I could call the ambulance and call my mother. And she got me a pillow to put under my head. I literally could not get up off the floor, and sat and held my hand until my mum got there. Aww. So, my little hero. And so I went to the hospital, and they couldn't work out what was wrong with me. I then had a hysteroscopy, which is an internal camera. And again, they said, well, it's not the fibroids that's causing it, and there's no product anymore. So I was diagnosed with dysfunctional uterine. I know it's horrible, isn't it? Dysfunctional uterine bleeding. And they basically said, well, to get rid of this, you either need to get pregnant, which of course I was desperate to do, but that wasn't happening. Put in the coil. Again, didn't want to do that because that would stop me getting pregnant, or have a hysterectomy. And I was 39, and I was like, no, don't want that. So these are all pretty dire options. And I was about to, try and get another second opinion. And then that following Friday, I was back in hospital again. And this time it was really, really serious. So I was, upside down on the bed because I was about to pass out. I'd had morphine. They called the gynecologist, and I was rushed into surgery, and they put the coil in. And that stopped the bleeding. And apparently that was miraculous, because the doctor was not expecting that to happen. They were just going to do it to see. And she told my mother, she'll have a hysterectomy. So, but I came to, and the anaesthetist said, I still have my womb. And everyone kept saying, oh, you look so much better. You look so much better. And I was like, is it that bad? I mean, was I that bad? My mother said I was more yellow than her own mother was on her deathbed. Oh, I'd lost so much blood. And so a nurse told me later on that weekend, because I spent the weekend in hospital, that they had a crash team ready, a crash car, whatever it was. So they thought they were going to lose me, that I was bleeding out so much. So, but this coil had been put in to stop the bleeding. It had stopped the bleeding. I had 4 pints of blood transfused that weekend, and then just had to deal with the fact that I couldn't get pregnant for another, 12 months or whatever, because it was in for 12 months. And so now I'm over 40. And we haven't been able to get pregnant since. So it's out now. But so secondary infertility, because there's no other, apart from obviously I'm older now. But but for me as well, it's all a lot of the post-traumatic stress disorder. So, that's fear of going anywhere near a hospital again. So, and potentially miscarrying, and my eggs are older, and just all of that just freaks me out. So we have, between us, we made this decision that we were going to stop trying, which was, really difficult to make. And I go off it and go on it again all the time. Whenever I see babies, I'm like, no, I want another one. but we've, if it happens naturally, it happens, and that would be amazing. But otherwise, it's just trying to come to terms with the fact that it's probably not going to happen.
Natalie, can I ask you, do they know what caused the issue?
No. I mean, my, I think when they say dysfunctional, they kind of just don't know.
Such lovely words again, isn't it? Goodness me.
Also, I just think it's bullshit that you're like hemorrhaging and they're like, we don't know where it's coming from.
Well, they thought it might be the fibroids. And like I said, they did the hysteroscopy to check that. But they were all in different, you know, not in the places they would have expected them to be to cause the bleeding. I think they were outside the womb. So no idea why I was hemorrhaging so badly. And it was really quite shocking and a lot to deal with. I look back on it now and think how the hell I got through that. I don't want to do that ever again.
No, fair enough.
So you guys both work in law. And Sumaya, you kind of mentioned there that you realised that law was not a good place to be if you were experiencing this kind of thing. Can you talk a little bit about your experiences of the kind of thing that you witnessed while you were working in the sector?
In terms of my own personal experience, when I had the first ectopic I mentioned to you, so it just so happened to be that it was sort of almost Christmas just before having the ectopic and then afterwards. So I was able to take sort of a couple of weeks off because it just tied in with when the office was closed, etc. But I remember vividly, and it was one of the things that made me think actually my time in law is done. When I returned, it was my first week back, and I think it was that we returned on like the Tuesday, and I think it was the Thursday. I had a follow up appointment with my doctor, and I just wanted to check sort of everything was healing all right internally, and I sort of tried to get the very last appointment I could because you just feel this obligation to make sure you're always pulling your weight. And I couldn't say, I've just actually had some fairly serious surgery internally, I'm sorry, but I've got to go. You know, you just can't have that conversation. And it was like 6:15, and one of the male partners in the team came and sort of dropped this piece of work on my desk at about 5:00 and said, you know, we really need to get this out today. And I said, well, look, I'll do my best, but I've got to be at my doctor's appointment for 6:15. And realistically, that means I need to leave here for 5:30. And he just said, well, haven't you just had 2 weeks off? And sort of just slammed the door.
Oh, my God. I thought, charming.
But what you know, that was my personal experience. And, you know, I remember looking around me. I didn't see a great deal of senior female role models that made me think, actually, I can pursue my career and at the same time pursue my family goals. And at that point, you know, having a baby wasn't actually on my radar. It wasn't on my husband's radar. But I knew that it would be something that would be. But actually, now that I'm on the other side, now that I sort of work in law but moving people around the legal industry, I've certainly seen an evolution over the last probably 4 or 5 years for the better. But it's still an incredibly old-fashioned industry where those at the top are, you know, they're white, they're male, they're middle-aged. They don't really understand the struggle that is. The female mental load, that is, you know, a biological clock. They don't really understand things around, you know, what fertility planning can mean. They really have no idea what it can mean for someone that's undergoing fertility treatment and just how horrendous that is. I always talk about the amazing senior female lawyer that I worked with that had an egg retrieval in the morning and then took a transatlantic flight that afternoon. Christ. You know, and it's that sort of thing where if you're going to prove yourself and if you're going to justify your place in that team at that firm earning that kind of money, then, you know, really you need to kind of, there is this unspoken rule almost that anything to do with family planning is secondary and you just have to kind of suck it up. But as I say, there's definitely been an evolution. Things are improving.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the things I was going to ask you guys about was that we interviewed Jane Ann Gaddier, who used to be the CEO of Virgin Money. Like, she was one of the most kind of senior women in the City of London back in our first series. And she talked about doing things like that, egg collection in the morning, like heading off to America in the afternoon. Mm. And I just thought, I think, Gabs, we were both kind of really struck by like what women in those positions used to have to endure. But I did think it was used to have to.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I do think it has improved. But and the thing is, I mean, all of this like chronic pressure and stress and fatigue is just so not conducive to a pregnancy outcome, whether it's natural or via, you know, assisted means. But I think that women have just had enough and, you know, they realise there are people that are going to kind of, you know, be fairly old about it all and just actually throw their hands in the air and say, you know, I'm done with this, let's have a conversation.
Fuck it.
Exactly.
Natalie, what's your experience been like?
Well, I'm now a partner at Burgess Me, and I have younger junior solicitors who assist on my cases, on all the other partners' cases. And as is the pretty much the norm in family law, they are women. And they are late 20s, early 30s, and some are getting married, some are in long-term relationships. And you can just see that motherhood is on the horizon. And so bringing my experience to my firm when I joined, and I was really very open about my experience with my miscarriage and wanting there to be a bit more of an open culture in our firm, because I knew these young women were probably going to want to have babies. You know, they confided in me that they may have trouble, and I didn't want them to worry about their careers whilst also worrying about their, you know, family life, because we just want, I certainly wanted, and my partners supported that, to, you know, recognise that lawyers are fully rounded human beings, and they have a life outside of work. They have families, and they're not just robots in the work, doing the 9 to 5 or much longer hours than that that we do. Mm. And if you're going to have struggles, especially if you are needing IVF or anything like that, or having a miscarriage where you're going to need to go to lots of appointments to deal with it, that you don't want to be worrying about the impression that that's giving to your bosses. You want to feel supported. So that's kind of where I was coming from in terms of wanting to make a difference.
Kind of carry on with that story, because the next thing that happened was that you were named the world's first fertility officer.
It goes from the UK's first to the world's first, and it always makes me chuckle.
What is it? Is it the world's first?
No idea.
It's a global first.
But having had this conversation, I basically said, you know, this is what I'd like to achieve, but I didn't have the words for it. I didn't know what that would look like, but I certainly knew it was a top down. It was getting the partners on board, and it was Pete and Antonia that basically said, well, why don't you be our fertility officer? And as soon as they said that, I was like, oh, that's so obvious, so simple. And definitely I could do that. So we have a wellness officer, Kirsty, and she does that brilliantly. That was put in place when we were having the pandemic and everyone's working from home. And you want to make sure that all of your junior staff that are working from their bedrooms or everything are feeling supported and they're looked after. And if they've got any problems, they've got a dedicated partner to talk to. But on the fertility side of things, where I'd had this my own experience, plus I also do fertility and surrogacy law, so I deal with clients who have these experiences as well. So it just made sense that it would be me who was doing that. So we rolled that out, and that, you know, it had a very good reception. Yeah. And then we talked about it at our Infertility in the City first event. Yeah. In December.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that one. Tell us about that.
Nice segue. having these experiences and meeting with Samaya, we'd met a few years earlier at an event, and she had written an article about fertility benefits. And I'd responded to that to basically say, well, you know, this is great and all very well and good, but, you know, we definitely need to change this culture. And over the pandemic, a lot of lawyers were talking about wellness and making sure that lawyers were being more mindful and putting up boundaries and not just burning out. And we both agreed that we kind of needed this conversation for fertility as well. So we had a coffee, and that's when we shared the stories that we've just shared with you. Mm. And knew that, you know, we wanted to do something about it. So we put together this event, and that, you know, Samaya came up with this fantastic name, and we put it on in, like, I think it was 2 months to the day. We had this fantastic panel of lawyers and coaches, fertility coaches. We had an in-house lawyer from Channel 4, and they all talked about their own personal experiences. And what we find is that everybody comes at it with a very unique perspective, but there's obviously all these similarities, and people can really latch onto that. And we had about 60 odd people in our first event, and it was just before Omicron hit. And you know, it was very, very successful. Mm. And because we wrote about it, Samaya and I wrote this article in BioNews, which was picked up by the Mail on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And because we'd written about this fertility officer role, because we talked about it in the first event, we wanted other law firms to take it on and you know, bring that concept to their own firms. We wanted it to impact not just our firm, but other law firms as well. And that's kind of where we were starting in law firms. And so he emailed me and we had a chat about it. And I was like, and I knew there was going to be an article about the decline in the birth rate. And and he'd asked me if the fertility officer of anyone else was doing it. And I'd said, you know, I don't think so. I've not heard of it. But certainly people are wanting to do it because we'd had this great feedback after the event. And that Sunday, I have my picture in the paper. So talking about it, and he, you know, said the UK's first, and that was it then. I mean, I think that was a bit of a hook. And then it got picked up by, you know, the Times and the Telegraph. And then you guys got in touch, Emma, you got in touch with New Statesman. And then I was on Women's Hour. So it all kind of snowballed. It was amazing. But from that, we've had our second event as well in July, and we doubled our numbers. We had about 120 there, and we had 7 on the panel, and it's been absolutely incredible.
What I'm intrigued about is what kind of people are coming to this event, right? Are you getting older women as well, or is it generally kind of, you know, women of reproductive age?
Total mix.
What do you think?
I think it's a total mix. I think it's young sort of lawyers in the city that are concerned about it. I think it's young lawyers in the city that don't have any concerns as yet, but are wanting to sort of make sure they're armed with information should they have any problems. I think it's that kind of typical demographic, kind of mid-30s to mid-40s women who have started thinking about fertility, and actually, you know, it's a much harder journey than they envisaged. At the second event, we had certainly a lot more men attend, and we were sort of quite proactive about that, actually. And we also had a lot more sort of very senior level law firm people, so, you know, managing partners, senior partners, people that are head of HR and HR directors and recruitment directors and that kind of individual, because actually they have, you know, significant influence in the organisations that they're at. And so they can take on a lot of what we were talking about. And I think what's just made it such a resounding success is that everybody on the panel has had a very personal experience with fertility, whether that be someone that's never had any fertility challenges per se, but has wanted to freeze their eggs because at that point in their life personally they weren't, you know, in a relationship and able to have a family, or whether they've had recurrent, you know, miscarriage, recurrent fertility failure, etc. And so I think it just hits different, the messaging hits different when it's coming from people that have had those experiences.
Do you think there's an element of city firms kind of waking up to this? Because there's also been like quite a lot of city firms following tech giants by offering like fertility benefits like egg freezing and IVF and stuff like that. Do you see that as well? Do you think it's something that should be routinely offered, or is it, has it kind of got a bit of a less than altruistic tendency to it in trying to make sure women are sticking around a bit longer?
I don't think law firms do anything for anything for no good reason, frankly. You know, their businesses and ultimately bottom line is what they're thinking about. You know, that's my view. And I think they realise that they have to be more, I think they're being responsive now rather than proactive about it. And initially the sort of the really top law firms were offering fertility MOTs. I hate that phrase, but they were offering fertility MOTs. So basically fertility investigations, and they were offering support with, so financial support with things like egg freezing. And Natalie and I have always said that we think that kind of lulls people into a false sense of security and it's not the right thing. But I think actually they're being a lot more holistic about it now. So they're offering things like, you know, sort of coaching for fertility. So you've got people like Emma Menzies, who is, you know, a coach, but she specialises in fertility at work issues. You've got organisations like Fertifa, which provide, you know, a whole host of benefits for men and women undergoing fertility treatment in the workplace. And so I think they're doing it because they need to respond, because their competitors are doing it and they've got to keep the finger on the pulse.
It's just literally competition.
And attraction and retention of staff. And I think it's really good for, because these things are really expensive. So if you have an employer who's offering it as a work benefit, then I think that's a really good thing because, you know, it kind of, you know, the cost of it prices so many people out of it as an option. But also with things like egg freezing, you have to do your research. You have to know that you should be young and not old, or not at the sort of older age. And you have to understand that there's not always going to, it's not a guarantee. It's not an insurance policy. So as long as you go into it with your eyes wide open and you know what you're getting yourself in for, and that you, and you were still making other decisions about your fertility and not just relying on that in the back of your mind and just giving all of your fertility fertile years to your employer, then you can, you yourself will benefit from that.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to think about it. I still can't decide whether I'm creeped out by like Google doing it or not. Two more questions before you go, and thank you so much for sharing your stories with us, because I think it's really important to just talk about, we talk a lot about fertility in the workplace, but I think there's certain workplaces where it's harder than others. And the law is really hard because you have things like court dates that you can't avoid, right? And, you know, there's just some industries are less flexible than others, and the law's probably right down there with like submariners. So I guess just before you go, what advice would you guys give to a woman who's struggling to balance quite a high-powered, like high-demand career with her fertility?
I would say be aware of your very type A characteristics, because from what I've seen from the sort of really senior women that I work with, you know, generally women in high-powered positions, you know, it's high-performance culture, it's high-stress culture, and that does attract a certain profile. And if you're that typical type A, you know, you like, you're very organised, you like your list, you're in control, you're used to having, you know, you set your mind to something and you smash it and you exceed and excel, that same kind of pattern doesn't follow your personal life always. And so actually, if you're finding that in terms of your fertility journey, you're just not having the same traction, there comes a point where you have to just stop and ask for help. And that means taking personal responsibility. So one thing being asking for that help and reaching out. And secondly, actually just having the confidence to say, I can't take on that piece of work, or, you know, I can't, you know, this isn't the right time for me to do X, Y, Z, because actually now I realise that I need to focus on this aspect of my life, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. It's all about balance. And, you know, if you've managed to get yourself to a certain position where, you know, you have that pressure, that power, that, you know, that package, there's no reason why a momentary pause, or even if it's not a pause, you know, you're running that side by side with your career, you're going to suffer any, you know, any professional harm. I think, yes, it does happen, and it did happen, but I'm always so surprised with the female lawyers that I work with who actually demand and call in what they think they deserve. And usually the response from the law firms is a very positive one, because they realise they don't want to lose that person. Mm. They'll do whatever they can to keep them.
Yeah.
I love that recognition of the type A person needing to just recognise. I like it a lot. Natalie, how about you? What's your piece of advice?
So for me, I think people are talking about it more now. And just a couple of years ago, I didn't know anything about infertility, and you don't know anything about it until you go through it. But once you have gone through it, if you share your experience, you'll often find so many people who've been there through it themselves, very similar experiences, and there is a there's an uplift, there's benefit to have from that. And if you lead by example, what you're doing is you're creating the confidence for other people to share. And the more we share, the louder this conversation gets, and the more we can demand in terms of support and, you know, legal protection. I mean, I'm working with Nikki Akin MP at the moment to try and change employment law so that everybody gets the right to have time off for fertility treatment, rather than just relying on employers having it as part of their own policies. So things are definitely changing, but it requires people to not be silent and not feel that shame. It's not shameful. We are going through something hideous, but we are in it together.
That's a lovely, lovely answer. And as a final question, ladies, can you tell us about your podcast?
Yeah, so we, the three of us, so myself, Samaya, and Emma Menzies, we have decided that we are going to launch a podcast called Infertility in the City. Hopefully we are going to be launching end of September, early October. It is going to be focusing on the intersection between infertility and work. So that's going to be very much our niche, and it follows on from the events that we've been running, and hopefully we'll do more of in the future. But now we just want to do what you guys do and talk to loads of people and be able to put that content out there so that we help inspire other people too.
Excellent work.
We'll listen out for it. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. It's been so nice to talk to you both.
Thank you so much.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Now it's time for...
IVF.
What the F? Lovely. Oh, that's a short one. That's a short little note there.
I thought that would be quite fun.
Yeah. We're talking about COVID.
We are. I know.
That little thing does not want to leave us.
No one's been talking about COVID for ages, have they? It feels like it's like gone.
Yeah, it hasn't gone. It hasn't gone. I had COVID the cycle before my most recent IVF cycle.
Oh, okay.
Did quite a lot of Googling to be like, was this bad? Because somebody that I follow on Instagram told her clinic that she had it the cycle before her IVF cycle, and they said that she had to cancel it.
Really? Was she doing a collection though?
No.
Oh.
Yeah,
you had a frozen embryo transfer.
Yeah, I had an embryo transfer. So I was like, minimal risk. And I was Googling it and it seemed like minimal risk.
Yeah.
Although quite hard to find any information, if we're being honest.
Well, of course no one knows, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
no one's done the COVID impact on endometrial surfaces.
Yeah, exactly. So we shall see.
Yes. However, Professor Tim will give us his opinion.
Yes.
So back in 2020, at the start of the pandemic, there were obviously lots of concerns about the effects of COVID on fertility and pregnancy. And that's why the HFVA stopped treatment cycles in the UK for a couple of months. Since then, the data has really shown that I don't think we need to be concerned about COVID and egg, sperm or embryo quality. And certainly we haven't noticed a change in success rates, despite obviously lots of our patients having had COVID over the last 2 years and then gone on to have IVF. The national guidance is that if you have COVID, then it's worth getting over the COVID before going into treatment and taking drugs. Partly that's because you want to be sure that you've recovered from COVID before you have the anaesthetic for the egg collection. And also I think for men, if you've had COVID and you've been very unwell with it, with a fever, then we know that that can affect, or any fever can affect sperm production. So it's worth sort of making sure that things have settled down before you come through for treatment. The main problem with COVID is if you catch it during pregnancy. So pregnant women who catch COVID can get very, very sick, even if beforehand they were absolutely fine, before pregnancy if they were fine. And that is why it is still strongly recommended that people get vaccinated against COVID, particularly, I have to say, if you plan to be heading into pregnancy. My friends who run ITU units will all say that the sickest patients they've had, sickest sort of reproductive age patients they've had, have been those that have been pregnant, particularly in the third trimester, and have caught COVID. So I think continuing with the vaccinations is very important.
You all right, mate?
Hey, yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm better.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good, 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 good.
Yeah, it's been a funny old week. It's been like, you know, the classic. I mean, we talked about it last week, but the classic 3-week wait, kind of being in limbo, like, I don't know, what's going on in there kind of vibes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
how are you coping with that?
I was coping fine. Well, like, as I said last week, right, I was in so much pain that I wasn't really thinking or worrying.
Yeah.
About this stuff. But now I'm like, the pain really seems to have subsided a lot. It hasn't gone away completely, but like, it's not anywhere near as bad as it was.
God, so weird, isn't it? What is it that was causing it to be so bad at that point? I wonder.
I know. I really want to, I'm going to grill the consultant when I next see her and be like, what the fuck was going on?
Yeah.
Like, and it's still like, there's times when it's quite bad. But like, you know, this time last week I was taking paracetamol, like 5 doses a day, which is 1 dose too many. You know, I was just thinking back to when I went to the urgent care centre and I was like doubled over. I couldn't walk. I couldn't stand up straight. And I'm not in that situation anymore. But I'm still getting like a lot of, like some in the middle of the night, especially, it kind of radiates down my left leg. And yeah, and like I am still taking maybe 1 or 2 doses a day of paracetamol. And obviously, like in the middle of the night the other night when I was lying awake thinking about it, I Googled paracetamol in pregnancy. And there was like a meta-analysis of a load of studies showing like it can cause all these problems for your baby. You shouldn't take paracetamol. And paracetamol is like the only thing you can take.
Yeah.
So I like obviously lost it, like freaked out. I've been taking so many. And yeah.
And what's been your response to that? Have you found out any more or have you just...
It's interesting because I went to a thing the next day and saw a friend and was like, oh yeah, I just read this thing. She was like, how many studies are there? How good is it? What journal is it in? And I was like, thank you for asking those questions because that really grounds you. Like if it's a shitty study, then it doesn't matter. But I don't know. It was like a meta-analysis of lots of different papers and it showed that it like increases all these kind of neurological disorders and it obviously doesn't do that. It does it if you're taking it to excess, but I was taking it to excess. So that then obviously I was like, I'm going to stop taking paracetamol. And I was in so much pain for a couple of days. But I don't know, maybe I've like got used to it, got used to the pain a bit. I don't know. But
But your doctor did say you could take it, so.
Yeah, because she probably doesn't stay up at 3 o'clock in the morning Googling. Like probably. No. Yeah.
I hope doctors don't do that.
No. Yeah, they probably just like get their knowledge from normal channels.
What are normal channels these days, though? Google is a normal channel these days. Mate, I'm so sorry with all this. It's shit.
Yeah, but it's okay. It was taking my mind off it, and now I'm just worrying, like, what's going on in there. And last night, I just had this like massive premonition that it's not going to work out, and, you know, we're going to go, and there's going to be no heartbeat. Which has happened to so many people we know, right? It's happened to so many people that we've interviewed. I just had this massive, like, I think it's the first time I've like kind of been punched in the face by reality, like what could happen. Right. Because other than the like extreme pain, I'm not really getting any symptoms, which is absolutely normal.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm ridiculously tired, but that's because I'm not sleeping very well at the moment because it's really hot. So, you know, it just, there's also a lot of like, is this the pregnancy? Is this like normal pregnancy stuff or is this the cyst of doom?
The fist cyst.
The fist cyst.
Yeah, it is confusing, right? Because you do have this double thing going on, both causing side effects.
Yeah, right. So yesterday I got like quite bad, just like cramps, like uterine cramps, which is slightly different to the cyst, which causes like more pain on the left side. Mm. And I was like, oh, I wonder what that is. Like, is that part of, what's that part of? And I've been getting quite a lot of lower back pain. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, is that to do with this? Or is it the pregnancy? Or what is it? So there's a lot of like, yeah, I just don't feel like, and I know this is such a kind of a cliche at this stage, but I don't feel like I'm pregnant. I don't get any kind of, I keep having to remind myself when I'm like about to drink some wine or something.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm sure it doesn't kick in for a while, does it? The feelings. It is just now just a bit like kind of just detached. It's like, you know, it's a concept more than a reality for you at the moment. And your reality is definitely the cyst. Because that's just what's causing you a lot of jip.
Yeah, it's causing me jip. Yeah.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah. So that's what's going on with me. It's just like, it's the usual just like ramblings of a mad woman while I wait for this bloody scan. But I tell you what, this time in my last pregnancy, I'd already had three scans.
Oh yeah, because you'd had a load of bleeding by this point, right?
Yeah, and I've only had one this time, and it wasn't even looking for anything, it was looking for the cyst.
Oh, so no subchorionic hematoma that we can detect so far?
No, not so far. Yeah, but obviously, you know, we were talking about Carfest earlier, and we were at Carfest the other day, and I had suddenly got this kind of cramping, and like felt a bit moist. That's such a gross thing to say, but, you know, my knickers felt wet. And I was like, oh, that's it. I'm losing it now. Mm. Went to the loo, no blood. So that was a good thing.
That is good.
But it's funny how that, like, sense of doom is creeping
in. Yeah, it's your instant thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, mate. Well, yeah. I think let's just keep plodding on. It's all you can do, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got 2 weeks to wait. Another.
So for 2 weeks.
Yeah, but I think probably you guys will only have 1 week to wait. So that's nice, isn't it? Because we're recording a week ahead.
Yeah. Oh, news coming in just a week for you guys. Yes, we are. Well, I'll do what I can to keep you occupied in the next 2 weeks.
Thanks, mate. If something very dramatic happens, then obviously we'll record. But right now. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of boring, really. Just me being like, ow, 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 ow.
Oh, ow, ow. Is that a bad ow, or a good ow, or a bad ow?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Uh-huh. I'm lucky. What you been up to? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Thanks. I'm good. I am not having anywhere near as a dramatic time as you. The worst thing that happened to me last week was that my dress that I got made for Carfest was too small. Because a few people have been on Instagram going, but I thought you had a dress made. And I was like, well, I did. And I got it home. I was so confident that it was going to look good. I didn't even try it on in store. And then I got it home and it was too tight and I was gutted. So I was like, what the fuck am I going to wear now? And then I felt silly. I felt silly that I'd had a dress made in the first place. But I guess the thing is, really, you know, in the whole thing, scheme of things, I can go back in and have it made again.
Yeah.
And it's going to be used for something. I'll just have to make up another event. Can somebody do something in, like, you know, like the next few months that I can wear this dress to, please?
Yeah. It's quite summery, isn't it?
It's a bit summery, yeah. But I'm thinking I might tone it down.
Okay.
Like make a more autumnal colour.
Yeah. Do you know what? It would look really nice if you wore it with like some thick tights and some big chunky boots and a big chunky cardigan.
Okay. Yeah. If I had it like a wine coloured as opposed to bubblegum colour, which is So I think I'm going autumnal. I've got a wedding in October. I think we could be okay. Going to be okay. It's not going to be a complete waste of my money and my time.
Great. Okay.
In other news, watched the first episode of the new Game of Thrones thing, whatever it's called, House of Dragon.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say now, if anyone is thinking about having children. And in fact, actually, anyone who's in the infertility community probably shouldn't watch it either.
Yeah.
Anyone that's pregnant, don't watch it. Definitely anyone that's lost a baby, don't watch it. It was a lot.
Yeah. So you warned me about that bit and I skipped through it and I was fine.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
You watched it?
I skipped through the like really horrible looking bit. I was like, oh, I see what's happening here.
Skipped. Oh, I can guess what's about to happen. Yeah, awful.
Yeah.
What else? That's kind of it, really, to be honest. I don't know any other news. God, I'm dull, aren't I?
What a week. What a week we've had. Me just lying in bed, Googling, can I take paracetamol? And you having a dress that's too small.
Yeah.
We should definitely be broadcasting about our lives.
Oh, actually, wait. I've got quite big news. Fucking hell.
I know what this is.
Botox on Wednesday, guys. B Mate. To the O to the ox in my forehead. Quite excited. Yeah.
I'm so excited to see it.
I know, but you know what happened, right? So I was in the hairdressers. I got my hair cut short and more blonded. And I said to the girl who is, I'd say, 23 or 24, I said to her, oh, you know, the reason I'm growing out my fringe is because I think I've decided to get Botox. So, you know, I've just decided to just do it. And she was like, oh, yeah. I mean, I get it all over my forehead. And I was like, oh, my God. I thought she was about to say, oh, you're too young for Botox. But she's been getting it for years. She's 23 or 24. Oh, my God. I know. What? I'm like, oh, right. She's like, prevention's better than cure.
I thought they recently proved that that's not true, that that's not a thing.
I think that theory means that you end up paying a lot for Botox over your lifetime.
Yeah, I think that's what that is.
I think it's correct that I'm just going to get some now.
Yeah, I think it is correct too. Also, I don't think you need it. I think you're beautiful as you are.
You have to say that, mate. I appreciate that. But it's for myself, I would like
it. But if it looks good, I'm getting some.
You're going to wait and see what happens to my forehead.
Yeah, what if you get like wonky eyebrows?
Who knows? Who knows? What if I can't make any of my funny expressions anymore?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyway, that's my big news. That is my big news, isn't it, really? Let's be honest.
Well, I can't wait to see the results.
Yeah, I'll share everything next week, guys, including photos.
Right, mate. Well, see you next week.
See you next week. Well, hello guys. If you listened all the way through, thank you. I hope that was okay.
Yeah.
Good to still have you here.
Yeah, good to have you here. Next week you'll be hearing about the 7-week scan.
Oh my God.
So that'll be fun, won't it? So yeah, like we're actually talking the night before I go for mine. So
yes, we are. Yeah,
I would say God pissing speed, myself. My yeah, I mean, I'm really quite nervous.
Are you? You seemed to chill earlier.
I mean, I think the closer it gets, the more nervous I get. Because it just seems like, why wouldn't it all come crashing down? Anyway, so that's what we'll be doing next week. So we'll see you then.
Yeah, speak to you then, guys. Oh, we'll have a mystery guest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we will.
All to be revealed.
Bye-bye now.
See you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.